Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
But that's what she said.
Happy holiday.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be nation. Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
And then they trash him and say he's a fucking pill-popping, you know, pothead or whatever when he left.
Fuck you, Daddy.
I don't know the fuck the Department of Health is.
Did you worse than Josh Richards?
The Christmas snow is white on the ground. When old Santa gets into town, he'll be coming down the chimney down.
He'll be coming down the chimney down.
It's the holiday season. And Santa Claus has got a toy for every good girl and good little boy. Santa's a great big bundle of joy when he's coming down the chimney down.
When he's coming down the chimney down.
He'll have a big fat pack upon his back and lots of good...
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. And we hope by this point Podbean has gotten the shit together so you can actually hear these episodes. We pay lots of money and get no service or no explanation. It's kind of annoying, Scott. And of course, there's Scott is the Scott Criscola, my one and only PIC.
JR, it's always a pleasure. Welcome, PTB Nation, if you're out there somewhere behind the firewall of maintenance, to episode 180 of the Place to Be podcast. We are 20 episodes away, JR, including our second season.
Yes, we're closing in. We have some cool stuff planned for episode 200. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yes.
We have some cool stuff actually planned for the next couple weeks here. So,
yes, we
and,
do.
You know, I think Podbean may become one of the grievances we may air this week. We'll see. So.
Yes. But in any event, it is always a pleasure, JR, mm-hmm. and welcome everyone to episode 180. Podbean has been doing, obviously, by the time you hear this, it would have been, Podbean would have been fixed, but
right.
They're doing some type of major maintenance.
Yeah, we're getting a little backed up. You know, we had the week off, and now we're getting backed up. We're going to be posting like 18 episodes at once.
Yeah, why couldn't these clowns have done it last week? Seriously. Only one podcast that matters on that site. Hello. So, all right. It is Monday. And Raw is, of course, going on as we speak. Speaking of pay-per-view, this Sunday, the final pay-per-view of 2012, JR,
mm-hmm.
as TLC will emanate from the Barclays Center in the fine borough of Brooklyn, New York. And now that we look at the card coming up, aren't you kind of glad we didn't get tickets?
Yes.
Very good.
Yes,
we saved,
we'll break
we
that
saved
all down this week on headlines.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. Yes, I just wanted to mention that there is pay-per-view coming up, and on Thursday we'll go through the whole lowdown along with all of our football jabber with our good friend Kyle Forchetti. But tonight, again, it's Monday, which means we open the door and see what's shaking. All right. I'm sure he's in here. I'm going to get the shit out of him because it's been so long. He probably thinks that we got canceled.
Hey, what is going on here?
Get out of the way, Tubby. We got more important things to worry about. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, V Squared, two nouns tonight, JR. Two nouns that are very explosive on their own, but work particularly well together. And that is fire and love.
Nemesis. Traveler. Each on a downward spiral towards damnation. They are among the blackest souls. A different sin has dragged them to the bottom. One man walks with blood-red fury coursing through his veins. The other with ice-blue vengeance burning in his soul. For here, one must leave behind all hesitation. Here, every cowardice must meet its death. Like the mythical figures of Dante's Inferno, all who cross the threshold into the eight circles of hell will be shown no mercy. Within those fires, there are souls, each one swathed in that which scorches him. The Inferno knows no pity. The Inferno knows no remorse. Within the flames, they will suffer. They, who went as one to rest, Dante's epic saga. These warriors who passed through the burning gates of Hades will never return the same. There is no exit from the flame. You must simply transform into the language of the fire.
And now, 10321 presents WWF Unforgiven in your house, where the Undertaker will battle Kane in the first ever Inferno match. And where tonight, the owner of the World Wrestling Federation has promised an event of catastrophic proportions will occur sometime during Unforgiven.
Very resurgent at the end there, that music. We win the war, all of us. Scott, yes. Look at that. We uninterrupted because I actually had some forethought and planning and downloaded these clips ahead of time for once. I'm going to have to play them off YouTube.
Super. That is excellent.
Defeated and, Michael Buffering.
Yes. And we've already had enough Podbean issues. We don't need any buffering issues. Buffering and maintenance.
True that.
Taboo words in the Place to Be podcast. Another awesome open. And we keep that up for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they're really focused tonight on the hell and the fire and all that kind of stuff, so. Makes sense.
Yes. Tonight, inside V Squared of the Place to Be podcast, we bring you Unforgiven 1998. The first full-blown, unequivocal Attitude Era pay-per-view. We are in the full throes of the Renaissance, JR.
Yes. Everything we've been hinting at is finally here.
Yes.
About it!
Howdy. We're kind of in an area where they say howdy to everybody, I suppose. I don't know. April 26th, 1998. Live from the Greensboro Coliseum in Greensboro, North Carolina. Vince McMahon's home state. And I had, we were talking earlier today, JR, during pre-production about, I was going to go on this whole big, you know, soliloquy about, you know, the confidence that Vince has and the World Wrestling Federation has, that now they're delving into, you know, WCW territory, an actual pay-per-view in Greensboro. And I'm thinking, these are two national companies. This isn't like 1986.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with that at all.
No, nah, it doesn't matter.
I think they stayed, you know, I think they stayed close to their home territory during the lean year, 95, 96, 97, when things were down a little bit. They didn't venture too much out of the comfort zone. I think that was by design. And I do think what you're saying plays some role. I don't think it has anything to do with WCW. I just think the fact that they are now, business is picking up and they can kind of get back to their big arenas and everything else, that they're kind of venturing out of the Northeast and Canada where they resided for much of 97. I mean, were any pay-per-views or anything major in 97, like in the South at all?
Well, remember 96, we had Beware of Dog, which was in Charleston and Columbia. Right?
Yeah, and then, you know, its time was in Florida, but
it's in Florida.
I mean,
Florida.
All of 97 after, I mean, it depends if you're going to Texas.
Texas, Tennessee, Illinois, New York, Virginia, Rhode Island, Calgary, New Jersey, Kentucky, Missouri, Quebec, Massachusetts.
Yeah, so kind of mid, you know, they didn't go west at all.
No, not really. Yeah. And Kentucky and Tennessee really don't count as, you know, WCW territory. As a matter of fact, Tennessee, you know, is
mostly hillbillies.
Kentucky. That's mostly like Cruz. That's most Cruz territory. Yes, and you know, Smoky
Spit
Mountain,
and Chaw, and buckets, and
eating
buffets, shooting
married
things.
Cousins, and dentures, and yeah,
fucking
rabbit
Cruz
ears on
family.
TVs, and all right. Before we get to the attendance, which is awesome, I'd like to do the history for. We're gonna do it in reverse. JR, the extensive history of the Greensboro Coliseum.
Built in 1959, Scott, on your birthday, October 29th, 59, it opened up.
Yes,
renovated in 94 and 2005.
Where my baptism was, yeah.
Yes, your baptism. Yes. No, your baptism was at that giant church in the what arena was that we were discussing? It turned into the Westboro Baptist.
Oh, the Westboro Baptist. One of those fucking lunatics. No, the Summit in Houston.
Oh, that's right.
Is now a Westboro giant church. It's those crazy people that freaking that protest funerals and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Really kicked with that.
Well, they're down with baptism, so it worked out.
Okay.
It doesn't have the capacity varies depending on venue. So
okay.
Apparently it's changed so many times, we don't know the capacity. Oh, no, there's multiple venues on the facilities. There's a Greensboro Coliseum, which holds 23,500.
Okay.
And then there's the War Memorial Auditorium, the East Wing, the Odeon Theater, the White Oak Amphitheater, Greensboro Aquatic Center, the Terrace, and Graham Cawthon's apartment, all located on the Greensboro Coliseum Complex.
Well, that's very impressive. I forgot that there was so many, buildings, so many buildings in the complex. Teams wise, obviously, it is a hotbed throughout history of professional wrestling. Of course,
yes,
the backyard of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, run by the late great Jim Cornette Sr. Then his sons proceeded to run it for the – he died before I was born, believe it or not. So I think it was like 1847. I'm not quite sure. No. But, yeah, he, of course, a hotbed of professional wrestling. I think there's some minor league hockey that's been played there.
Did you know that that is where President's nominee Richard Nixon actually hurt his knee in Greensboro?
Really?
And that what caused him – he claims that's what caused him to look sickly during that debate that eventually lost in the race to JFK.
Oh, JFK in 1960. Yes, he looked sweaty and all messed up, even though...
Is that why you voted for JFK in that election?
You know, it's funny. I probably, believe it or not, even though I do love Nixon, I probably would have voted for Kennedy in 1960, because all friggin' Catholics did.
Yeah, you're a front runner. You're like the... you're down.
Me? Me, front runner?
Well, in sports, you are.
I'm like, oh, for my last God knows... Well, I don't want to get into that again. Okay. Call me a front runner. All right.
well,
but anyways,
one last question, though, regarding Greensboro Coliseum. Any guesses what the first... concert was held at the Coliseum. Oh, first Christ. Major concert.
Major concert. Well, let's see, if it opened in 50.
It was frequented by rock and R&B throughout the 60s and 70s, but the first major concert.
I would have to say Elvis.
Nope.
No? Oh, God, I'm thinking that time. James Brown?
Nope, it was Hey Hey, We're the Monkees.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Stunned.
Elvis did play there on April 14th, 72, and that footage was used for his final film, Elvis on Tour.
Oh, okay.
So, Kiss has played there 10 times. Wow. Van Halen 8 times.
Last Train to Clarksville.
El Cool J has played there. Soulja Boy. Ludacris. Ja Rule. Nas. The East Side Boys. The Ying Yang Twins.
Yes. And they all did Monkees cover tunes.
They did.
In Anniversary. The reason I wanted you to do the history first is, JR, because such an extensive history in Greensboro, the crowd on this night in 1998 was a wrestling record 21,427.
So that means it never sold out then, because it says it held 23,000.
So I guess never sold out Greensboro. Can you imagine? That's crazy. All those legendary Starcades.
Maybe that's like a newer number, you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. Because I mean, you figure all the Starcades and Clash of the Champions and, you know, Flair title defenses, it's crazy that they never had this many people.
Yeah.
Kind of nuts, but maybe they expanded. Maybe it wasn't that big before 1998. But still, that means the fans have jumped on the bandwagon of the product. 21,427, Your buy rate, 0.85, pretty good. Mm-hmm. And your commentators, the voices of the Attitude Era, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. And this crowd is unbelievable. I mean, they are geeked from beginning to end of this show. They really are. All right, let's dive in. And no, I'm not going to ask about free-for-alls anymore. We begin with a feud that's been percolating over the past month or so, I guess you would say, maybe 2 months. We talked about it on our last episode when we did the special April 13th Raw, that the growing schism between the leader of the Nation of Domination, Farouk, and its stud golden child of the Nation of Domination, that being your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, The Rock. The divide is growing, JR, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I thought it was a good divide. I thought it was a divide that needed to happen. You know, we talked about it, like you said, on that Raw, and Rock and Farouk had really kind of been coming to a head leading into Mania, where it was clear that Rock was trying to take over the Nation. It was clear that he was trying to ascend to that role and become the alpha dog he was meant to be. And coming off WrestleMania, they had an altercation the next night on Raw, and from there, things finally split. Rock had turned the entire Nation against its former leader, Farouk. Farouk was kicked out. He formed an alliance with Ken Shamrock and Steve Blackman, and on the 4/13 Raw that we reviewed, they all came out and brawled. And that was set up here into the six-man match. And a weird match here, Scott, in that Shamrock doesn't get into it much. He doesn't wrestle much out of the 13 minutes. So I don't know if he was injured or banged up. It just seemed odd that they kind of kept him out of there.
Yeah, I mean, the feud with The Rock is still strong. I mean, we haven't had a clear-cut winner of any of the matches. Shamrock would win the multi-person matches that no title was on the line. And then, of course, the two title shots at the Royal Rumble and at WrestleMania, he wins, and then, you know, his head explodes and then blows it. And, well, not at the Rumble. The Rumble, he got screwed. At WrestleMania, he lost his mind and, you know, had his chance to win the title and blew it. So, here...
I wonder if part of it is they wanted to keep him... I don't want to say strong because they win the match, but I think they wanted the focus to be on Farouk. And so they kind of kept Shamrock just in the back so he wouldn't be overshadowed in any way, maybe. I don't know. It's like they wanted to keep them kind of separate because they're pushing them kind of concurrently on the same path feuding with Rock. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, obviously they're taking two guys and kind of morphing them into one feud. Mm. Maybe that's what they were doing, but I don't know why Shamrock's not in this very much. It's very strange.
My buddy Bucky Dent says hello!
Why couldn't he have been their manager?
The Nation or Farouk Shamrock?
Farouk and Shamrock. And okay. I don't care. I want to manage anybody. I don't care. The new Midnight Express. Don't faze me. I don't care.
What did you think of this little push for Farouk? I mean, do you think it was kind of too little, too late? Do you think he connected it all as a face? Did it make sense? Or do you think it was just a necessary evil that they kind of
I think
had
it was a necessary
do?
Evil. There's no way he was going to be a fan favorite, regardless. Because Rock, I think, was more popular even as a heel.
Yeah, probably.
And I think he was just here to put Rock over, really. And then they could reestablish him down the line, which they would end up doing. But, yeah, I think that it was just a chance for Rock to kind of face both of his, you know, two-headed beast at the same time in Shamrock and Farouk.
And kind of to get D'Lo and Henry some pay-per-view time and give them. D'Lo was kind of showcased here quite a bit. He got a lot of in-ring time. And, you know, Ross and Lawler did a good job really putting these six guys over, and the crowd was just smoking hot right out of the gate.
They really were.
Yeah, Farouk, you know, surprisingly enough, he gets the win here clean with the Dominator, which surprised me in that he pins The Rock. You know, I could see if they would have had him pin D'Lo or Henry or even pin The Rock with, you know, whatever, Shamrock hits a belly-to-belly and Farouk pounces. I just kind of weird that they had him pin Rock clean, but I guess to this point, Rock really hasn't. Character-wise, he's been built strong, but in the ring, he really hasn't. He's not looked strong at all wrestling-wise. I mean, he was gifted the title and has defeated Shamrock twice by, you know, reverse decisions, basically, or, you know, using weapons. And so he's not really booked as a strong champion, so I guess it's kind of okay, and it puts some heat on Farouk and you know, would lead to an eventual title match for him. So I think, like we said, it's a necessary evil to put Farouk and have this feud. It makes sense. It lets Rock get the feud out of the way with Farouk to kind of cement himself as the premier guy in the Nation, as the leader. So I guess it made sense that you had to have the match.
Yeah, and Rock has, I think it's been properly booked that he's been kind of dogging. You know what this reminds me of? I'm getting a very familiar symmetry with the heel IC run of The Rock and 11 and a half years earlier with the heel IC run of Randy Macho Man Savage. Chicken shit heel. Decent wrestling, but not quite there yet. A lot of Memphis dogging. Remember, he was in Memphis for a short time.
Right.
You know, a lot of dogging and posturing. And I mean, I almost feel like their careers are somewhat symmetrical in that aspect.
Yeah, I think it's a good comparison. It's one I hadn't really thought of. A guy that was really, you know, coming out, breaking out and with the secondary title, like you said, really didn't get
the in-ring part yet.
Right, a lot of big wins. Well, they could work, but they weren't positioned as strong in-ring competitors. They just won by any means necessary that they could. I think it's a very good comparison. I thought you could see the talent in both men right out of the gate, and it made sense to put this, you know, secondary title on them. You can question the booking, but his character is so strong that it really didn't matter how he was winning matches.
The only difference I would say between the two is you knew that Savage had an unbelievable in-ring talent. You just needed the right opportunity to open it up, and we knew when that would be.
Right.
Rock, obviously, the jury is still out because he doesn't really have a background yet. Mm-hmm. So you're wondering if he ever will break out.
Nobody called anyone a JT.
Speaking of Savage, Butch Reed, just slick. I don't know. Just trying to correlate JT.
What?
I should have just kept going. Sometimes I should do what Matt Marzell tells me to do and just kind of move on from the video.
I guess so.
The audio clip if I can't think of it.
It'll lead to me editing stuff out now.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, on a side note, JR, we had talked a few casts ago about when the Intercontinental title belt switched. According to our wonderful column, please follow along, bigelow34.proboards.com, this is actually when the new Intercontinental title would make its debut. It would be here. Of course, replacing the very, very popular, old school, iconic Federation Intercontinental Championship, which debuted in mid to late July of 1985 for Tito Santana after he defeated Greg Valentine in the cage match in Baltimore when Valentine took the old school green belt, which is one of my brother's favorite belts, and beat the shit out of it on the cage wall. Now, according to our fun facts, so according to us, the urban legend, our belt, yeah, this is according to us, hello, Reggie Parks, who, for those that don't know, is
played for the Nuggets, didn't he?
No, he played for the Pacers, went to UCLA, dog Spike Lee. Legendary belt maker.
Robert Pack. That's what I'm thinking of.
Robert Pack? God. Jarrett Jack? What? All right. So Reggie Park, legendary belt maker, has made all the big belts for all of the major promotions. He is the one who allegedly came up with the big gold belt idea, he and Ric Flair together in 1986. This was his design, that you know, that oval kind of with the stage, you know, like the ridged stage, the way that the old school IC belt looked. Well, apparently, WWF paid a monthly fee for the rights to that belt.
Hmm.
Monthly or yearly, I'm not sure. And by 1998, they didn't feel like paying it anymore.
All right, let me ask you this, Scott. If this was true, why would they wait till now to decide to get rid of the I mean, if they're paying a fee through all this time that they were down, losing money, hemorrhaging money, couldn't afford wrestlers like Bret Hart, but they're still shelling out cash for this title belt, something doesn't jibe with me.
I don't know.
The only thing I think was maybe Reggie bumped the payment up, or maybe a payment was due. Maybe they had been paid up, and I don't know. Maybe they just wanted a new belt. I don't know. I don't know if I buy
it. I bet you they just wanted a change of look. You know, the Attitude Era, this new...
Yeah, that I buy.
...chapter in the history of the promotion. Maybe they just wanted to switch. You know, they changed the world title. They did change the world title.
Right.
The only difference was, I feel they upgraded from the Winged Eagle. I know the Winged Eagle is your baby. I think they upgraded from the Winged Eagle to the Globe. I've always loved the Globe. It's one of my favorites.
I don't think they upgraded, but I will say the change wasn't a bad one. I wouldn't say it upgraded, but okay, it wasn't like this train wreck.
No. But, I mean, you had to look – I mean, you looked at the – and I mentioned in our comments at 14, you look at when Stone Cold has the belt on the table, that thing is fucking wrecked. It's like pieces falling
off.
Well,
yeah. I mean, you know, I get why they did it. And like I said, it's not – I didn't mind the Globe. I just liked the Winged Eagle so much. But this IC thing was a disaster.
Whoever created that – the only cool thing about it was the early belt, those first few months, the leather was purple. The back leather was purple, which I thought was kind of neat because I like purple. But the design,
you gotta be kidding me!
I'm not kidding you. I like purple. But the belt design itself had oval, and it was I didn't like, very uncreative, very bland. You would think if this era was new and refreshing and exciting, they would come up with a more vibrant looking belt, and they really they all got globed. Everything had a globe on it at that point. Pretty much. Now that you think about it, the new IC belt and the world title were the same, except the IC belt was mushed from a circle into an oval. Otherwise, they almost looked the same. I don't know if the IC belt had an eagle, but the bird on it. In any event, it was a downgrade. But Reggie Parks is one of the greatest belt makers of all time. Him.
And then he had to return his trophy to USC.
You're finding any Reggies, aren't you? And then he hit three home runs against the Dodgers in the 77 yes. World Series. So.
Yes, he did.
Okay. So, anyway, enough of the belt. The match is, it's all right. But obviously, The Rock is multitasking here.
Right.
You know, he's still feuding with Shamrock, but now you knew the minute The Rock joined the Nation, even back in mid-97, that eventually the Nation would explode, you know, and it did. So are you surprised Farouk won?
Oh, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, look, you know, I know why. I can't believe they put him over him. Didn't make too much sense. I mean, I just didn't think Farouk had any legit future at this point. You know, so I just, much to the anger of Kevin Kelly, I didn't think there was much there with Farouk. So
please, no,
no, no, please. So I was surprised. I was definitely. I mean, I get that they wanted to do a singles match, so it made sense to put heat on Farouk by letting him win. But I wouldn't. I don't know if I'd job my brand new minted star that's breaking out and this is my future to a retread. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. So there you go. So Farouk, Shamrock, Blackman win the six-man.
It's really just, I mean, Shamrock, like we said, didn't get involved much, and even Blackman, he gets in there, but the focus is solely on Farouk in this match. That's really what it was, Farouk and then the Nation.
Yeah. You think Shamrock was hurt, or do you think they were just giving Farouk a little more time in that match?
I think they just wanted to give Farouk time. I think they just wanted him to be the focus to build to that match. I mean, the only other thing I think of, they could have done like the old Gauntlet match. Instead of doing even the six-man, they could have had Farouk beat D'Lo, beat Henry, and then The Rock screws him out of the match and walks out or something. You know, they could have done something like that to build Farouk up without actually going over The Rock. I just, it's a minor quibble. I just don't see why he had to beat The Rock. Just.
No. I mean, obviously we'll see as time progresses what ends up happening. But Farouk gets the surprise upset in our opener, which again was an average match, nothing bad. All right, out comes your World Wrestling Federation champion, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yeah, how about this early? So this is the Attitude Era, JR. Mm-hmm. This is what we look forward to. Guys just come out of the blue, and guys leave, and you know, and they come back later, and match.
Oh, something's always going on. And the cool thing was, there's like no break, really, because Farouk's music playing, they walk out, and all of a sudden the glass breaks, and Austin comes out. So it's not like, it doesn't, you know, because I watched the show today, it didn't feel segmented. Everything just kind of flowed. And that was one of the cool things about this era that we'll see. Everything felt just organic. Like, well, we just flow from one thing to the next. You know, nowadays everything's so prepackaged and segmented. And this is by design. But it was a cool feeling how things just kind of happened. You know, they just kind of flowed from one to the next.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, you didn't know what was going on, what was happening. That, you know, in 97 it was almost train wreckish. But by 98, they finally put some type of formula together.
Right.
And just not told us. So out comes the champ, and he reminds the timekeeper, who's that really goofy-looking guy
Mark
with a mustache.
Geaton.
Yeah. There will be no screw jobs in his title match later in the night, or he better call an ambulance and make sure the midgets are driving after they play basketball.
And hiding with Tracy in the front seat. So, a lot of screw job references throughout the show. Ross really kept bringing that up in reference to this, you know, will Vince do it again? And I think on Raw, Vince had actually hinted that he might do it again if he had to, because Ross even says, like, you know, we've heard a lot about the screw job, or we've heard a lot about Montreal these last few days. So I think that was really one of the points they were harping on in this match, was Vince going to screw Austin like he did Shawn? So, I think that's what the impetus here, that he's coming out and telling the ring announcer, you better not ring that bell even if Vince tells you to.
So, Austin trying to lay down an early salvo on what could be a screw job by the man. Were you getting a weird feeling that after Montreal they were going to use, you know, screw job like, oh, God.
No, I didn't think that at the time.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. I think it was such an important part of Vince's character. So, I don't think it was overplayed or overblown at this point. I mean, that's what made him into this evil dickhead boss, was that he had done that to Bret Hart. So I think it's perfectly fine that they talk about it here and use it. I mean, that's why Austin should be wary of him. So I don't think it was, you know, what it will become, and I'm beaten into the ground.
Right. I'm just curious. I didn't think so either. I'm just curious what your opinion was. So Austin tries to defuse any possible future situations. Next up, our first title match of the evening, the World Wrestling Federation.
It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. Every time you come around me.
What? Does that play as you walk in lustily out of the bathroom and look at the poster on your wall?
That's correct. With the European Championship. Course. I am talking about the World Wrestling Federation European Champion, Triple H, in a rematch from WrestleMania taking on the King of Hearts, the Black Heart, Owen Hart. I like to know so I can be your and more. I like to know. I like to know she cried. I was ready for this feud to end.
Yeah.
Owen was already embarrassed enough.
I agree.
He looked like a dumbass at WrestleMania, and now he had the job again here. This time, China is suspended above the ring.
Yeah, one month too long, for sure. I thought Owen needed to be separated from this. DX is in such a weird spot this month. You know, we saw the revamp of the night after WrestleMania, and the week after that was okay. They're kind of getting their legs under them. And we talked about this on the review of Raw, that they don't... They're weird that they're being positioned as heels, but they're getting a lot of face pops, and they feel like they should be faces because they're crapping on WCW and calling. They're not really going against the promotion like they were when they were heels with Shawn. Mm-hmm. And you got this weird feud where Owen is still looking for revenge on DX, but Shawn is gone, and he was the main guy. And Owen isn't even that over as a face anymore in this match. The crowd was kind of more behind DX with X-Pac out there with Helmsley and China up in the cage, and... You know, Slaughter is still punishing DX, but he's kind of a heel with Vince. You know, there's just a lot of weird, you know, things will get righted pretty much like the night after this. Things will get righted. But this 4 weeks was just a very odd time for DX and an odd time for Owen. Owen is really just getting lost in the shuffle already. Just felt kind of bland, you know, and he's still looking for his revenge, like you said. And I mean, I get why they wanted to keep the title on Triple H, but it's just the European belt. Like, I think they could have given it to Owen here and let Triple H just kind of move on without the title. I think that would have been okay. I don't think we needed Triple H with the belt. I think Owen could have won it and moved on and ended the feud with the victory.
Yeah, I think so too. It was time for the whole anything that was a vestige of the past pre-WrestleMania needed to end. So I think Triple H and Owen needed to split their separate ways and go on to other things. Of course, they would end up reconnecting in a different way down the line.
Well, not even down the line. I mean, way sooner than that. But
yeah, well, yeah.
But that would be more organic and make more sense and be more traditional roles. Here, Owen, I mean, watching and listening to this today, Owen's face pop. I mean, if you think of how hot he was when he came back in December and how quickly that all just faded away. And like we said, it was just bad timing. He just couldn't really feud with Shawn because he had the thing with Austin going on. And, you know, the feud with Helmsley just wasn't as, I don't know, the heat wasn't there. It just wasn't. China plays a pretty good role in this match. She's suspended up in the cage due to Commissioner Slaughter's ruling, so she can't interfere. And they keep focusing on her a lot. At one point, she's actually pulling the bars apart and bends them open and starts to climb down. She's hanging from the cage above the ring. And then all of a sudden the cage lowers down to the ground and she gets out. And it's revealed later that Road Dogg had actually been the one that was pulling the strings in the back and allowed the cage to be lowered for her to escape. So, and then X-Pac would get involved, hit Owen with his fire extinguisher, and allow Hunter to retain his title.
Yes. A lot of stuff that I don't want to say needed to happen, but... it was just time for this feud to end. It's funny, JR still calls him Helmsley. He's still Helmsley. JR calls him that, but that obviously fades as and the Triple H moniker would be more common. Owen Jobs, the whole, you know, at this point, pretty much the whole, you know, post Montreal, do it for the Hart family thing is pretty much done. It's pretty much, you know, ran its course. Things do change for him, and for now, he's just kind of lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
But he does get himself a new an upgrade.
Yeah, we'll get to that in our next show. So, but for now, he's still just kind of lost, floating around, just aimless. And at this point, you wonder, you know, maybe he should have went to WCW if he could have. They would have let him out of the deal. You know, I think we'll think that many times over the next year or so.
And the fans at this point. Are full-blown DX fans now. Now, it's just inevitable. You've got to turn them now. Now, I think the fans are giving the bookers a direction with which to put DX in. And obviously, they would listen. But tonight, you know, good match. The match itself is fine. You actually graded it higher than I did. But, you know, just the whole
these two had good chemistry in the ring. They worked well together because they're both pretty good workers. So that's not the problem. The problem is just We didn't need to see it again, and the outcome just completely buried Owen once again. So it just makes him look stupid. Like, he's got no friends, and he can't outnumber them, and he can't outwit them, and they just keep, you know, punishing him, basically.
Yeah. So there you go. So Triple H retains his World Wrestling Federation European Championship with a win over Owen Hart for the second consecutive month. All right. Next up, we have...
the hottest tag match ever in pay-per-view history.
Oh, Jesus. According to Kevin Kelly. These two of his teams.
That's right, yes. Well, kind of.
Well, I don't think this was meant to... Like, this is the incarnation we're discussing, but in a match that would be top of the card awesome 12 years earlier, is nothing now. The Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, taking on the new Midnight Express. Bombastic Bob, Bodacious Bart, or whatever it is. I don't know if it was the other way. I think I got that right.
Yes. Bodacious Bart, Bombastic Bob.
Bombastic Bob. Yep, I got it right. And
Salacious Scott.
Salacious, yes. And JT Justin. I don't know. The NWA World Tag Team titles on the line. Yeah, right. I still like to know how the hell Vince pulled this off. There had to have been some...
I can tell you right now.
Maneuvering.
I know the answer. NWA, no one gave a shit. It barely existed. They were doing anything for publicity. I think it's fairly obvious.
Yeah, it's true. They probably let them.
It's not like there was some, you know, big-ass conglomerate raking in billions of dollars all over the country. Oh, we can't let them use our title belts. They're like barely defunct. Howard Brody, and the only thing keeping them alive was the rankings in PWI that we actually pretended there was some kind of NWA out there somewhere.
Yeah, not exactly Sam Mushnick and Bob Geigel in the the Goldust trio muscle the McMahon.
This isn't your granddad's NWA.
Yeah, no,
this isn't D'Amato's NWA.
So there you go. There is your tag team title match here, going back in time.
I mean, I thought it was smart. You had the Rocky Rolls along. You know, they have them here. Why not use them to put over the Midnight Express, and you kind of build? You know, Ross actually kind of kept harkening back and almost acting like this was just a newer... I mean, I guess it is the new Midnight Express, but almost like it's the same lineage. Like, he kept talking about the history of these two teams and everything else. So kind of goofy, but kind of fitting that they have the match in North Carolina. I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. I mean, if you get the Rock and Rolls there anyway, why not use them to put these guys over? I mean, it's...
You graded this match lower than I did.
We did this a while ago. I mean, you know, any reviewer can tell you that, you know,
things change.
Subjects change. Yeah. And we've come a long way since we did some of these early reviews, but
yeah, it is true.
I think I'm not saying the match was great, but I'm fine with the idea of it. And, the only thing I didn't like was the Rock and Roll Express coming out to the Rockers old theme song. It's kind of weird, but Midnight Express get the win, 7 minutes. I mean, nothing special. The Rocker Rules lay down here, and this is actually their last match. They're gone after this, so I think they do some enhancement work for WCW and then just kind of bounce around the indies.
Yeah. I was just so upset because, you know, I am a big NWA guy, and I just hated seeing the legacy of the letters just get embarrassed. That's a Vince Russo thing. That's one of the few things about him I hated. You know, it's one thing you want to have a new, fresh outlook. It's another thing to shit on history, and that always did kind of bother me. Having said that, the Rock and Roll Express have no business being in the business anymore, to be honest with you. They're just old and just not good. And you know what made it worse? You know what was more embarrassing? They came out to the Rockers theme. What was that all about?
I'm going to ask you a serious question, okay? Mm-hmm. Do you listen at all when I speak on the show? Like, is there any part of you anywhere that actually pays attention when I'm saying things? Like, what are you honestly doing over there? Are you watching Michael Vincent's porn collection? I mean, what are you...
Did I miss that? I was looking at something on...
I pretty much just said all the things you just said. I talked about the Rockers theme.
You know? I didn't even catch you mention the Rockers theme.
Well, I talked about it. I mentioned it.
Oh. Well, in that case, it's a really bad match, and the pneumatic Midnight Express retained the titles.
Fucking A.
Yeah, let's move on.
This isn't your hack point radio, you know. This is the big leagues.
All right. Why don't I make a pause and we can edit that?
No, we're not editing anything, baby. This is airing in the raw. It's like Saturday Night Live. You know, we may tape it ahead of time, but everything airs. Unless we make accidental racial or other type of slurs.
And all right, so I'm not ripping up a picture of the Pope, okay? That ain't happening.
Yeah, well.
All right, so for all of the PTB Nation members, I sincerely apologize for missing that. And if you'd like to replace me, which I'm sure my PIC sometimes likes to think about in his dreams, please send a self-addressed stamped envelope. Oh, wait, that's too old. Anyway, tout it if you have a camera on your computer. Maybe the program has its own. Or you can twat it, tweet it, or whatever to do.
All right. So anyway, Nation, if you want, you can send a self-addressed stamp. Well, actually, that's old. You could tout, you can twat or tweet, whatever you want to do.
Next up, we have
stupid? It sounds stupid, doesn't it?
An evening gown match. I'm just
involving Cesario DiFazio.
Cesario DiFazio and Michael Vincent.
oh, Lord.
Did they come out to the Rock? What? Did they come out to the Rockers?
Yes, they did. They came out with a copy of Anal Invaders 3 from the Vincent collection.
Maybe I need another week. Yeah. Oh, my God. Sorry, Dad. I'm embarrassing myself here. All right. Luna Vachon I feel like Phil Rizzuto right now, and you're. Oh, God. Where's the cannolis? All right.
They're right here. Down where?
Luna Vachon and Sable in an evening gown match. Very interesting. Of course, this continues the whole feud with Sable and Mark Marrow and Goldust and that whole mess of a feud that's been going on for the last couple of months.
Yes.
This is the first recorded evening gown match in WWF history. And that's really all you can say. There's nothing really to grade.
No, 2.5 minutes, and it's just there, really, so Jerry Lawler could, go crazy. Cantaloupes, jugs, everything else. Yeah, I mean, this is where you really start to see a transition of Lawler as well into a kind of a horn dog old man. I mean, he always was that in real life, but this is the first time we kind of get treated to it on television for over and over on TV, so... Yeah, nothing much here. Luna actually wins because the whole point was to see Sable basically naked with her ginormous gazingas flopping around here. So Sable really loses, but we all win, I guess.
You know what I couldn't stand either? What was with Lawler and all the nicknames for boobs?
See, the funny part is, that's how you sound every time when you do it. So I don't know. Yeah, I can't tell.
See, there we go. I'm going to fake you out now from now on. Yeah, I mean, this is just a eye candy match. And from here on out for the next at least 3.5 years, 3 years maybe. Maybe once we hit 01, it's not as big a deal. Definitely over the next 2 years, you'll see at least one, eye candy disaster per pay-per-view.
Oh, no!
Exactly, Flexi Lexi. I don't know either.
Yeah, again.
Billy, what?
And his shirts are too tight.
Yeah. So it's just the dairy farm. I think it's one of my favorites. The dairy farm. This is a mess. It's just a mess. So Luna gets the win because she's just the meaner chick and rips off Sable's evening gown, which everybody wanted anyway. So it's almost like a reverse.
And your shirts are too tight too, Billy.
Were her panties too tight? I'm not sure. Why did they come out to the Rockers theme?
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's just such a mess.
Yeah, no, nothing. I mean, whatever. It was the point. You know what? I give him credit. They kept it short. Everyone just wanted to see Sable in the bra and panties, and that was the whole point. So we saw it. It only took 2.5 minutes. Didn't waste too much time. We move on.
Yeah.
Sable continues to build, though.
Yes, she is. Yeah. This loss does nothing for her. Nobody cares. In other words, nobody cares that she lost. The dairy
right,
farm.
Yeah, the whole point was just to...
The dairy farm still grows.
So your naughty parts.
We have our next
naughty
title match of the evening as the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships are on the line.
I saw you with your man, smiling, huh? A coach bag in your hand. I was laying in the coop with my hat turned back. We caught eyes for a moment, and that was that.
Distracted by the Rockers theme with a coach bag in my hand.
Yes. Coach Merce.
walking through Rucker Park. wondering if I even noticed that we were talking about the Rockers theme.
Your coach Merce with Triple H stickers on it.
Yes. The Legion of Doom, and obviously what has become.
Sir, your lip gloss fell. Oh, it fell out of my purse. Hang on, let me pick it back up.
A Coach purse. You gotta open up a whole new,
That's gonna be the first PTB merchandise item. Is gonna be the Merce, the Scott Merce.
Yeah, what is it, Joe Fowler? Is that better than the $97 jean jacket with
Barry Dudinsky?
You could have Barry Dudinsky. Sorry, one of those faceless.
You go down to the mall, you get these Merces. They got nothing on them. You order it from the PTB podcast. It has Triple H stickers. It has the Legion of Doom shoulder pad icons. It's got Scott's face. It's got the midgets. It's got the gnomes. You can order only here for $355.
It's got Jordan Duncan's imaginary card where Andre wins the world title in a battle royal.
It's stuffed in the pocket.
Yes. All right. So for the like a fifth time in the last 7 months, yes. It seems like, the New Age Outlaws defending their World Wrestling Federation tag team titles against the New Age Legion of Doom. This was the one time. If you really, the whole point I have, the problem I have here, JR, forget the whole fact that this is my, you know, my favorite team, and you know, forget that. Just wipe the slate clean on that.
Oh, sure.
If you were going to take the, well, the reason I'm saying this is, regardless of whether you're a fan or not, if you're going to take the time to retcon these guys at WrestleMania, why the hell just not have them win here? Just let them win.
Why would they win the titles here? No.
Then what's the point of retconning them then?
Who cares? Who cares? The whole point. The whole point is to put them, they should be putting the Outlaws over them clean, not the other way around. The Outlaws are your new hot team. Why would you take the titles off them here?
Well, then what's the point of,
Scott Russo. What would be the point of that?
What's the point of giving them the Rockers theme? I don't know. Yes. What's the point of having the whole big thing at Mania? And
I don't know because they would try to breathe one last gasp of air into them.
Sonny's Foot Farm. That'd be later on in her career. I was gonna say Sonny's Dairy Farm, and I almost said
that'd be like if they brought Tom Brandy back in a new gimmick and put him over Austin. Now would that make sense? That's basically what you want to do.
All right. A few people would like that. I'll tell you that right now. I meant to say Sonny's Dairy Farm, and I said Sonny's Funny Farm, which she would join in about 4 years.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God. All right. Whew. Who was passing the moonshine around in Greensboro on that night? Wow.
Yeah, jeez.
Must be Cawthon's next-door neighbor. All right. So all I'm saying is if they were going to make a big deal out of starting them over and giving them the whole new outfit and all this other shit, then what's the point of having them lose? What's the point of even making a number one contender? Is this just a filler match?
It's just to put over the Outlaws. That's it. They repackaged them, made them come back, and they put them over, and then they move on to other things. And they don't even put them over. They just bullshit, double back suplex, you know, straight out of Hercules, King Haku from WrestleMania 5. And you don't even really know who won. And LOD celebrates their music plays, and then Fink announces that the Outlaws won. It's all convoluted. I don't know. This whole feud has been weird. They fought like 3 or 4 times, and every time the Outlaws barely, you know, scrape by or win. You know, they've kind of dominated the feud, but they haven't really won a match. And I don't know what planet you're on that you really think LOD should have won the titles here. I don't get it.
I just don't understand why you waste the time.
Well, that's stupid. Then they shouldn't have done that, but that doesn't mean they should put them over. I mean, don't, you know, just because you repackage them doesn't mean you bring, these dudes were like in their 40s. They were broken down. They were slow. And you wanted to put them over the hottest tag team you've had.
Stop it.
Huh?
They're not broken.
They're old. They're old. And just because you see them as an allegory for your own life. Old and broken.
Going to Sonny's Dairy Farm.
Yes.
with my stickers on my Coach Merce.
They're rough.
People are going to wonder if we have like a link to some website that we're selling PTB Merces per special vintage ball. You can have a Belding Merce. And you can...
anyway, I don't know. You know what? You have the hottest tag team. When's the last time they've had a team this hot?
Look, you're not. I'm not complaining about the Outlaws.
You're saying they should take the titles off them.
You're saying right now you're seeing a changing of the guard of my old school favorite tag team into my Attitude Era favorite tag team. All I'm saying is, if you're good at with everything that was going on in the beginning of 1998, with everything they needed to do to save their ass, they made a big deal out of giving them new tights and shave Hawk's fucking mohawk and giving him new this and giving him Sonny, you know, and then you have him wrestle and then just put another convoluted disaster on instead of giving him like a quick, you know, one more, you know, the Outlaws are hot. I think one, you know, what screwed them over is they did that convoluted shit ending at WrestleMania with Funk and Cactus. What they should have done was had LOD win the Rumble, forget the whole Funk Cactus thing and have LOD come out at WrestleMania and win the titles. Then maybe have the rematch here and have Outlaws win clean. How's that? Would that have made any sense? Would that have worked?
You lost me 800 ways from Sunday. I'm sorry. What?
If they come out to the Rockers theme and then they wear the merch. No. I'm saying if all the stuff going on in 1998, all of the things that they're trying to do to this roster and to this product to save themselves from going bankrupt, they make a total project out of repackaging a team that all they're supposed to do is put people over. If all they're meant to do is put people over, then why bother repackaging them? Why bother making a big deal about winning a battle royal and all this other shit?
Because it makes it seem like the Outlaws, they battle back and the Outlaws still own them. And it gives them at least a new gimmick to go through the rest of the year. I mean, they weren't leaving, but that doesn't mean they should come beat the champions to the belts. I don't see where that correlation is. I don't see why they needed to win this match to all of a sudden justify that change in character. Like, they can still stick around and have feuds and be a tag team. They didn't have to, like, you know, vanish because they lost this match. I mean, and they barely lose it anyway. So I just don't know how you can sit there and say they should have taken the titles off the Outlaws. But you didn't answer my question. When's the last time they had a tag team this hot? Steiners in 93?
Maybe. I wouldn't even go that far. How about, Jesus, not even a team in 92. Demolition?
Probably Legion of Doom in 91.
Legion of Doom 91. All right.
That's probably the closest. Probably the last time we've had a red hot team like this. I mean, we may be missing one or two, but I mean, they needed to marry the titles to these guys for a while. The tag situation has been so fucked up, and especially in 97, the belts bounced all around. Bulldog and Owen were great champions, but they weren't over like these guys are. So we've had, great title matches, but we haven't had a good, dominant, legit tag team in a while. I mean, I don't count the Smoking Guns. I mean, they were good for the era, but when you stack them up, where do they stand? I mean, the Outlaws, I don't know. I don't think I would have taken the titles off them at all here. Not one bit.
A couple of other aesthetic things here. Billy Gunn actually debuts his now famous Mr. Ass tights, which are the green ones with the little Mr. Ass on the butt. I don't know if Road Dogg's wearing those black ones with the X's on the side. I don't think he's worn those yet, but he probably has. But I'm not upset they won. I'm not upset about that. I'm not disagreeing. All I'm saying is it wouldn't – I don't think it would have hurt them. I think you're understating the Outlaws as a hot tag team. I think they could have afforded a loss to a legendary
not
team.
Forget it. Let's just move on. We're not going to agree on this.
No, I just think you're understating –
all right, Scott, I'm going to explain my stance one more time. These guys just became a team in December. They put the belts on them. All of a sudden, by February, they're red hot. You heard Kevin. DX was glomming onto them. They were so hot.
Right.
Okay. You have the titles. Finally have some stability, right? You're planning on turning this team face, okay? It's going to become one of your top premier part of your top faction. And you want to take the belts off them. Well, how does it just makes no sense. It makes no sense at all. I know they can withstand the loss, but why would you put the belts on a washed-up team? Who is LOD going to put over at the end of their reign? Back to the Outlaws? That's just keep them on the Outlaws. There's no money to be made in the LOD.
It kind of goes back then, and I'm trying to harken back to my comments at 14. But then this case could be made at WrestleMania for a convoluted crap ending with two guys that weren't even staying a tag team. I still think what they should have done was that they made such a big deal about retconning the LOD.
You're just trying to show off that you finally learned what retcon means after you heard me use it podcast to podcast.
Then when they switched to the non-sequitur tights, that's non-sequined. Oh, maybe that's sequined. Then change their theme to the rock. No, I'm not doing that anymore. To totally change up, have Sonny as their manager, make a big deal at the beginning, all this other shit, and then have the Outlaw have Funk and Cactus get beat up backstage before, earlier in the show.
So you don't see the difference between having Cactus and Funk in that match and LOD. You really don't.
No, I don't.
LOD had a
crap ending, and then they just get the belts back one day later. What the hell's the difference? What was the point?
So you're gonna do that again now, 3 weeks later with the LOD?
No, I wouldn't have done it here if they did it right there.
Oh, God.
If they had the LOD. Cash in the title shot at WrestleMania if you were going to have the Outlaws lose. have them lose there, big pop in Boston, and then have the New Age Outlaws win them back here. Then I would have had the Outlaws win here. That's my plan B. If you disagree with that, fine. Then my other option would be to forget about Cactus and Funk. That was it didn't care enough to come up with some convoluted crap ending at that match just to have them win it back the next night. Have LOD 2000 come out, cash in their title shot from the Battle Royal, beat the Outlaws, have a huge celebration, and then have NAO win it clean, flat out clean, right here at Unforgiven, and move on.
All right, you know what? You can stuff your fantasy booking in your merce. Let's go to break.
All right. Let's see what's going on here. All right, so there you go. LOD wins a match under the World Tag Team Champions. All right, coming up we have... All right, more to come here at Unforgiven 1998 from Greensboro. But my PSC needs to understand about history, and I need to realize where my merce is. We have to take a break. Because!
Keep your balls in your merce.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW ROH and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
So there's WrestleChat.net, indeed, where it's at. Great message board, plenty of news topics to browse, WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Still Real to Us podcast, much, much more. It's the official place for the PTB headlines, and if you click the PTB gnome on the right of the screen, you will head directly to our Podbean page and our full catalog of shows. So check it out, WrestleChat.net, indeed, where it's at. Also, head to our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. It's really where PTB began. Our written reviews, the territory wars, and so much more. So head to our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, iPhones, Droids, whatever you got. Go to Stitcher.com for more details. We also can't forget our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. It's the best research site you will ever find. Past ring results, pay-per-view reviews, and so much more. Graham's a good friend of the show. Always help you with what you need. So that's the history of WWE.com. We can't forget our good friend Jay Womet. Continues to battle with the demon. The guy's a warrior, folks. For a guy who's had so many medical problems, he's always in great spirits when he's on the show. He's one of our dearest friends. There's a great way you can help him out. Medical bills are not cheap, particularly with a very a unique condition like his. So head to our board, bigelow34.proboards.com, for more information. We'd also like to welcome our newest sponsor to the program, and that is the Wrestling Forum at twfnews.com. Listen, they're a wrestling forum, they're a blog site, but really they're much more than that. The guys at TWF are looking to create a wrestling media nation by affiliating with as many top-quality blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts as they possibly can. And that includes yours. They're the official forum of WrestleChat.net, and we here at The Place to Be have already joined up to have our podcast featured on there as well. So go check them out and find out what they're doing, what they're about, at twfnews.com.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
Nation, we are back. We both calmed down. Scott took a walk, took a cold shower, ready to go. Scott, why don't you quickly plug the Point app for us?
Yes. As I told everyone on our last episode, I used to do a radio show called The Main Event on a great internet radio site called GetThePointRadio.com, run by my good friend Mike, whose house I go to most often for pay-per-views. Well, now he now has a radio app, The Point Radio, on the Apple Store. Right now it's only in the Apple Store. Download it onto your iPhone or onto your iPad, and included in that is our full catalog of Place to Be podcast shows. So another outlet for you to check our archive out, and of course our new stuff. Mike's a great guy, listens to our show all the time. He's very complimentary of you. It's a great spot. It's a good radio station. Pop it on when you're at work. He plays a lot of great music. There's a lot of good music shows, good DJs. If you're a comic fan, there's a comic podcast. It's really good, a good radio station if you just want to have music on in the background while you're at work or at home or whatever. But the Point app on the Apple Store, you can get the full catalog of Place to Be podcast shows.
Hey, I may have a winner!
So even Art Donovan downloaded it.
It's like a crazy...
He's got a Colts merce. Did you know that?
Yes, he does.
Very nice. Yes. Signed by Andrew Luck.
Very nice.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Next up, before we get on to the next match, of course, this is Unforgiven 1998 on the Vintage Vault. Before we get to the next match, as you just heard, a song sung by a guy whose team should have lost the tag straps in the last match, Jarrett.
God, give it up.
Jeff Jarrett comes out and does a mini concert with a band called Sawyer Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, actually... kind of remember them.
I'm
really
sure you do.
Way. They had some. I think they had some hits in the late '80s. I don't realize they were around in the '90s, but and obviously Jarrett is not singing. Now the joke. Obviously the jig is up because we all knew that that Road Dogg or that the time the Roadie.
That's the song
sang,
you should have sang. The jig is up.
The jig. The JT is up. Steve Blackman, who of course has been kind of in a little mini feud with Jarrett. Jumps on him on stage after they do one song.
All right, Sawyer Brown, founded in 1981 in Apopka, Florida.
Apopka.
They won a 1985 CMA Horizon Award.
So there you go. So they've been around for quite a while. So they probably did have a couple of Billboard pop country hits in the
They've had albums in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s. They just had one in 2011, Traveling Band.
And there we go. So they've been around, look at that, almost 30 years.
Awesome.
So a legendary band that Jeff Jarrett was lip syncing with.
They should have had the Spin Doctors, as I said. Could have sang Two Princes.
Anyway. Two Princes.
This one's going to buy you rockets.
I saw them live.
I'm sure you did.
I did. All right. So Blackman attacks Jarrett, but then Tennessee Lee whacks Blackman with the guitar, and Jarrett ratchets up the figure four. I'm kind of digging this. Digging these guys in a feud. I like it.
Yeah, I think it's a good lower end mid card feud, and it's good to see Tennessee Lee actually playing a role as well. You know, instead of just kind of being a hype man, see him get in there and swing the tide for his man, help him out.
Yes, no, I agree. So so that feud continues. More about Jarrett next month. Obviously, as JR mentioned. Summer of 1993, saw him at New Haven Coliseum. Spin Doctors, Screaming Trees, and Soul Asylum.
There you go.
Effort for a trio. They were good. They had balloons fall from the ceiling. They're a very fun live band. Dance around a lot. They only had one album. Second album, I believe.
It was a good album, though.
It was a great album. Pocket Full of Kryptonite. And then the second album, I think, was called Cleopatra's Cat, and it was not as good. Okay. Now we have our last two matches, and this is pretty much the two matches that this show is pretty much anchored on. We heard it in the open.
Yes.
First up, in a rematch from WrestleMania, Brother versus Brother, Part
Brother.
2.
Brother!
Brother!
The Undertaker.
Brother!
Brother!
Taking on...
Turn out the lights! The party's over.
Not at the moment. The party was not over for... How does Vince say it?
That's gotta be Kane!
Bet your ass. And they, in the rematch, of course, at WrestleMania, The Undertaker did win, but it took a little extra elbow grease than normal for the dead man. It took three tombstones to take out his brother Kane.
What?
Yeah. And the character's still hot, as we've talked about extensively in the last few vaults. Kane was not supposed to have a very big shelf life, as usual with Glenn Jacobs characters, just kind of churn and burn.
Yes.
But not this time.
Yeah, turn and burn indeed, because that's what he's been doing. He's been burning his way to the promotion red hot. And Scott, we had talked about leading into Mania. Man, we had discussed the whole thing where he slams Taker into his dead parents' casket and all that. That actually was right before this match they did that. So.
Yeah. Yep. So the storyline itself still growing, but you almost feel like now, JR, that story is unnecessary. Now they're just feuding. That whole story and the house and the burn, you know, that was like the 97 still not quite attitude-ish part of the storyline. Now they just want to see the two guys bludgeon each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we head with this next step. We also have a debut gimmick, for they will not just wrestle a normal match.
No.
God knows we don't want to see that again. It is called an Inferno match.
Inferno.
And what it is, yes, around the ring, under the ropes, is...
Through the woods.
So, yes. Some kind of, I don't know. I don't know if it's gas or if it's... Obviously, it's gas. Gas run. It's some kind of contraption where, some type of methane or something is lit on fire, and fire comes through the these holes in the contraption around the ring. Now they try and time it. I don't think, have we ever discussed when they hit the ring? Is there like a thing that triggers it, or somebody must be doing it like manually, right? You think?
Yeah, I think there was clearly someone just triggering the pyro as the guys were hitting the ring. That'd be something interesting to talk to Kevin when we have him on for 98. But I'm pretty sure that it was just someone, you know, on impact they would hit the... But it looked really cool. I thought it was a great idea. I thought it made perfect sense when you factor in the history of these guys and the feud that they've laid out and what Kane's all about. I just have two minor... I mean, not even minor, maybe major issues with it. One, I don't think the match should have been predicated around having to light the guy on fire. I thought that made it, I don't say too hackneyed. I don't know. I'm trying to think of the words to describe it, but I think it would have been better if they just fought in the fire and it was a regular match.
I agree with that because they tipped their hand because obviously in terms of outfits, Kane always wears one long sleeve and one no sleeve. Well, he comes out with two long sleeves.
Right, No, he had the one. He had the one on.
No, he had two long. He had two sleeves on.
No, he has one. The one sleeve, I watched it today. Yeah.
So then, what caught fire?
His sleeve.
The one other sleeve.
Yeah.
What was I talking?
You're thinking of. I think you're thinking of later with the first blood thing.
Oh, maybe that's why. Maybe that's why.
I mean, I'll double check right now, but I'm like 99% sure he.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. The point is to say, okay, I was just looking at my comments. I only looked down and caught half the sentence. Taker is wearing no sleeves.
Right, Taker has none. So that's what the confusion
and Kane's
is.
I'm sorry, now I'm reading it. And Kane's one sleeve looks very bulky. That's what it is.
Yeah, Taker has no sleeves on and Kane has one. So anyway, to get back to my point, I think they should have just had the match in the fire. The fire is impressive enough as it is. Like, it looks great. So I don't think you needed to have... the stipulation where you're pretty much tipping your hand. Secondly, they could have really added some question to it if they this two things they could have done. One, they could have had Kane just have no sleeves, or they could have said Commissioner Slaughter comes out and says, okay, to protect yourselves, both men have to wear full sleeves. So you have Taker just wear a shirt that has full sleeves and Kane has two full sleeves. So at least this way is a little bit questioned. Right now, you kind of knew where they were headed.
Yeah, unless somebody's foot caught fire, that might be the only thing. But that you can tell by you. I'm pretty sure if look at it again, you could tell by Kane's arm. It's very bulky looking, and it's like soaked or whatever to protect him. You could tell that. The whole point of it is, I agree with you. I think for a visual perspective and just looking at the match,
right? It was awesome looking. It looked great.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
But making the fire part of it, you're tempting fate.
Well, no. I mean, it's not legit. It's just pyro. I mean, that part is okay. I'm fine with them doing it. They could have done it after the match, and then you're shocked by it because you're not expecting it. So instead of having the outcome already known where you're going to have to light someone on fire and a sparring with this guy that has the one sleeve, you could have done something where you have him wrestle a regular match within the fire, and then after the match, they're brawling on the floor, and Taker shoves Kane backwards, and he falls into it. And then you're like, holy shit, they did it. More than expecting it as part of the stipulation of the match. And like I said, they could have also done that swing by having Slaughter or Vince or someone say that both men have to wear full body suits to make sure that they aren't, you know, severely injured or something like that. At least then you can cover for it. But The match itself, I think, is okay. I mean, the gimmick really adds to it. The ambiance, the look, and the crowd heat was just phenomenal. I also really dug they brawl out into Jeff Jarrett and Sawyer Brown's stage, and at one point, Taker grabs the drum from the band and smashes it over Paul Bearer's head, so he flops down on his fat ass, and he's got the drum just sitting on top of his shoulders. It was really funny looking. It was kind of just like a classic, you know, Paul Bearer, shit eating spot. So I thought it was well done. I thought it was cool. And you know, the match is what you'd expect between these two, and 16 minutes was a little bit long. But the crowd was pretty enthralled with the whole fire blowing up every time, you know, anyone moved, and the heat of the feud itself. That I thought it was okay. It wasn't as bad as if, like you said, if it was a straight up match, I think it would have been a lot worse.
Yeah, I think that visually it was an amazing match to look at, but they weren't spectacular at WrestleMania. And now that you've got this contraption around the ring that's very dangerous, you knew they were going to tiptoe anyway. So, again, this was another case where you were just hoping to tell a good, psychologically driven story.
Yeah.
Without expecting, you know, four and a half star work rate.
Right.
But yeah, I agree with you. I think that the Inferno could be used for in a different role in the match.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done the exact match they did, only they could have just had it end in a pin, and then you have the fire at the end. That's it.
Yeah. Simple enough. And the Undertaker, obviously.
I don't do any tricks.
Yeah, I'd like to see you wrestle an Inferno match with your little pink shirt and your cockroach merce. The Undertaker, of course, sets Kane's gigantic jacked-up arm on fire and wins the match. So Taker is 2-for-2 against Kane in his big feud with his baby brother. And yeah, 16 minutes, that's a little ridiculous. What would you have done with that time? What match would you have? What would you have done with it? How much would you have taken off?
I would have actually split up. I would have taken like 8 minutes off. I would have done 8 minutes, and I would have split up that opening six man. I would have done the gauntlet thing, and that would have given the extra time.
Okay.
Or I would have just kept maybe Farouk versus like Henry or D'Lo single, and then something else with Shamrock and Blackman instead. Something along those lines.
Okay.
Or you could have added a Taka match. He's missing from the show. Could have done a little.
He is missing from the show. Another
title match.
Yep. Another title match wouldn't hurt. 1557 is a bit much. Is that almost the same? I'm going to look back. Is that almost the same amount of... Let me check historywwe.com. Is that almost the same length as their match at WrestleMania? Let me see. Their match at WrestleMania was... And this match is 1557. Yeah, it's only half a minute off from WrestleMania.
Yeah, so.
They could have hacked off definitely more than
that. I mean, the feud definitely warrants... time. I mean, the feud has been built so much, and I understand it, but it's just these two guys, you're really pushing it at this point. So it was good. Hopefully we'll see that. Maybe they don't get a break feuding-wise, but maybe they get a break from each other match-wise going forward.
Yeah, no. The feud itself, it's okay to keep it going, but you don't have to make the matches 16 minutes. that's a bit much. Okay. We are now up to our main event of the evening.
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my...
Oh, Chris Scola, you fucking piece of shit. Vincent Kennedy McMahon here with the Rob Houston Jim Duggan update. I hear you bitching and crying and pining for that old wash-up piece of shit, the Legion of Doom. Defend yourself.
They're one of the greatest.
I don't care. I already got your Christmas gift, Chris Cole. You know what it is?
What is it?
A fucking sack to put your balls in, you piece of shit. Pussy, stop crying. All right. On April 2nd from the ice. Oh, for Christ's sake. Jim Duggan team with Bubba the Love Sponge to defeat the Texas Hangmen. The fuck is going on in that shithole company? No wonder why we ended the rating streak. Christ. On April 4th taping. What the fuck? They taped this match on April 4th. Jim Duggan defeated Reese. Who the hell is Reese, first of all? And it didn't air until June 6th. What the fuck is going on in that ass-backwards Ashley Cruz motherfucking company? April 8th, Jim Duggan lost to Ming. April 9th, Jim Duggan defeated Kurt Hennig by disqualification. April 10th, Scott Steiner defeated Jim Duggan by submission. And we have that same finish on April 11th because the dumb fuck bumblefuck Alabama to Tennessee. Who gives a shit? They don't know what the fuck's going on anyway.
April 14th, Jim Duggan defeated Barry Darso. April 20th, what the hell? This guy worked every fucking day. He hasn't worked this much in 10 years. April 23rd, he defeats Reese. April 24th, he defeats Reese and his fucking peanut butter cups. April 26th, he defeated Reese again. And that's it. Vince Kennedy McMahon, I'm going to pass the fuck out. Give me a line of coke, you prick.
Duggan had a busy April.
Never mind that. I'm getting a gift.
Yes, you need it.
That was just symbolism. The whole thing, that was just him being funny. I think he's going to get me a gift. I do.
We'll see.
He was just being tough. All right, it's all for the show. He's just doing it for show. He's right. Getting a gift.
Well, he's got big shoes to fill.
You're not.
He's got big shoes and big pants to fill in the update world.
That's right. I'm getting a gift. All right. But I do have one question,
though. It's a gift, a vow of silence. It'd be a gift for all of us.
Who the fuck is Reese? I don't even know who Reese is. He's actually not making that up. I don't even know who the hell Reese is.
He's part of the flock, Reese.
Reese. All right. Somebody, Reese is not in
Malcolm
smash,
the Middle.
Thank God.
His name Reese?
Our main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. In his first title defense on pay-per-view ever, Stone Cold Steve Austin, midgets and all, defends his title against who? As we talked about in episode 179... As of April 13th, Austin had no opponent. And then, of course, came the infamous end of that Raw where Vince and Stone Cold were going to brawl. But then all of a sudden, out came Dude Love.
The Dude.
The Dude, who, of course, 2 weeks earlier, when he was Cactus Jack, vowed to never come back.
That was actually the week before.
The week before.
Two weeks earlier is when him and Funk were wiped out by
DX. That's right, they were wiped out, that's right. So the week before, he vowed never to be Cactus Jack again, and maybe never even come back at all.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, though, comes out as Dude Love. Vince gives him some grief. Dude Love comes into the corner and puts Austin in the mandible claw.
Yep.
What? Indeed.
And we went off the air not knowing where Dude lied. Where do you know? We still didn't have
what's
a contender for the pay-per-view. We had no idea what was going on. And so the next week, Vince comes out and he says he finally found the perfect man to be the hand-picked corporate champion that he's been wanting. That man was not Shawn Michaels. It was definitely not Steve Austin. He brings out Dude Love. He hates violence. He hates foul language. He's peaceful and calm. He's a lover of men. Dude Love comes out. He's dressed in a suit, carrying a Wall Street Journal, wearing some fake teeth. He claimed he's changed his ways and was going to take the title back for Vince and the WWF. So I thought this was really well done. I thought it was smart. It's almost like a ripoff of his ECW thing where he went the anti-hardcore, anti-extreme stuff.
Yep.
You know, we're all used to seeing him as Cactus Jack, this crazed, maniacal brawler, and he's even as Mankind. And here now, he's all corporate. He's dressed up. He's wearing false teeth. He's sold out. And all for the chance to finally get that main event and that world title. So I thought this was a brilliant, brilliant turn.
Yep. You took the words right out of my mouth. I was saying the same thing, that this does sound like that, what was it? I guess mid-late 95 in ECW. He went on the whole anti-hardcore, wouldn't go on roller coasters, and he was doing promos at water parks and all that other kind of stuff. Same thing. And that's one of the many things. You know, a lot of people think I'm not a big Mick Foley fan, and that's further from the truth. This is one of the things I love about Foley. He know whatever assignment you give him, he puts it in his mind, he percolates it, he matriculates it, and he spits out his way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is, this smarmy kind of butt kissing, you know, even gave him fake teeth, you know, right.
Very well done. Very well worked. Yeah. They had a lot of nice little touches and I thought it was good uses of Foley. You know, someone that had kind of run his course already as Cactus Jack, kind of lost in the shuffle a little bit. If they weren't going to put the tag titles on them, then you might as well do this, turn him back. I remember at the time being pretty pissed he went back to being Dude Love because I was, you know, such a Cactus Jack fan. But it was such a great gimmick and such a great spin on the gimmick that it was hard to get so mad. And we'll see it evolve over the next few weeks. But here, just kind of getting back into it. And I love the whole corporate thing. I thought that was fantastic.
I do too. And you're starting to see the building blocks for what would be the McMahon Empire on camera coming from here. This is a fantastic match.
Yeah.
Austin and Foley, who I don't think ever really wrestled in. I don't think they wrestled in WCW.
No, they wrestled here though. They wrestled on Raw, that Tough Man match in December.
Yeah.
Of 96, but and a couple times like on Shotgun and stuff, but nothing major. They haven't had really a major feud or match. It was very fresh. And the crowds were really just waiting and building for Austin. And that's what made him such a great top guy, such a great world champion, because everyone wanted to see him. They wanted to. They couldn't wait for the main event. And the heat here when he comes out is just phenomenal. The pop is huge, and Vince is out with Dude, and just all this chaos at ringside. And you knew you're just waiting for Vince to do it and screw Austin. Everyone was waiting for it. And this match goes nearly 20 minutes, and these guys just great chemistry right out of the gate. Really bust ass and brawl all over the place. And you know, it would set up the next month that we'll talk about, which would even top this. But this is a great palette setter for what was to come. It was just setting the table for the remainder, because this feud really only has about a week build behind it. So it was just kind of setting the stage, and you couldn't feel too ripped off by the finish because the match was great. And it was just another piece in the story. You got your money's worth. You may not have gotten a finish, but you got your money's worth of the match itself. It wasn't really like a screwy match. It ended in a crap finish.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. And 2 points I got to make before we talk about the match. Number one, I remember thinking when Austin was coming out, you can go back through history. I don't care who it is or what time of history it is, whether it's Bruno or Pedro or Bob Backlund or Hogan or Warrior or Brett or Savage or Shawn or anybody. Nobody was getting pops like this ever, ever in the history of the business. He owned these crowds, owned them every time he walked out. And he deserves all the credit for it because he earned it and did it on his own. Point number one there.
Yep.
Number two, again, Foley was a great foil because, number one, the guy will do anything for anybody. And the DQ finish is a little herky-jerky, but obviously we needed another chapter. So
right.
It doesn't take away from the match itself. Obviously, the whole hook was right. Vince was sitting ringside, and you're like, "Oh Jesus, here we go again." But it was just so well done, and and I applaud Foley because he knows how to adapt, and we'll see that over the next couple of years with different opponents.
Right.
He adapts. And
we've seen it in the past. I mean, we saw him adapt to Shawn Michaels and Mind Games and Undertaker, different styles. And you're right; it's a good way to describe him. He definitely adapts well.
He adapts and. Now, the better thing for Foley is that the style of the company is right up his alley. No, he doesn't need to be, you know, the old school Vince, you know, big, you know, chiseled, you know, Hercules looking behemoth.
Right.
It doesn't matter what he looks like. As long as he can have a great brawling.
I love the creation of the word behemoth over the last few weeks. It's really, really gave you some enjoyment.
Adding to the lexicon. The fact that that
that'd
now,
be like if you ran a faction as a manager, Scott's Bohemoths.
I am the lexicon. Everyone is non sequitur in my eyes.
Lexicon Luger and the Bohemoths.
Lexicon free mercies for everyone. The fact that now we're in a part of wrestling history where no one cares what guys look like or they're chiseled or ripped or anything, so long as they go out there and they entertain. Foley just knows how to do that. So who cares what he looks like? He's just going out, puts on a hell of a match, and the best point about it is he knows how Austin works, which makes the next month's show, the next month's match, even better.
So also to just add on to this, the chair shot that Austin nails Vince McMahon with on the floor was just fucking bone-rattling, and I believe this is the one that they say is busted McMahon's caps on his teeth, right?
Yes.
Is this the one? If you haven't seen this chair shot before, you just wonder if Vince was of sane mind at all. Austin just destroys him across the face with it. And it wasn't like one of those ones you swing from the side. It was just straight down across the head. And McMahon's knocked out. Austin gets in the ring and counts Dude himself, basically counts his own victory. And then Gerald Briscoe would inform Finkel that Austin had been DQ'd for using the chair and that Dude Love had won the match. So Dude gets to win by DQ. Austin's still the champ, but it's clear this feud is far from over. But a great match, and it was just a sign of things to come with these two guys.
Absolutely. And if for those that have not seen it, harken back to that what was it, Bulldog chair shot on Shamrock?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking that level.
Or the
I
Rock.
Mean,
just, no, I think this
was... Skull.
Yeah, I mean, those...
Was it Rock and Shamrock?
Yeah, the Rock and Shamrock.
It was Rock, yeah.
But Rock's was like one of those side-swinging ones, and it was Bulldog who hit Mankind. That was in 97. This one was just straight on, and it was like if someone was like laying on the ground and you punch them, and their head has nowhere to go. Like, that. Like Vince was like right up against Austin, and he just slams him with this chair. Like, Vince had like nowhere to go, and it was a thud. So... Good stuff. Good stuff all around. A great main event. Really makes the show worth watching. And Scott, I thought this is kind of a forgotten show, honestly. I thought it's, you know, I really enjoyed it. The crowd was great. The commentary was really good. Ross and Lawler really getting into a great groove by this point. A lot of good development, a lot of good angle advancement. No real bad match. Every match was, you know, had positives to it. The matches that deserved time got time, and the other ones were kind of kept short. So I liked this match. I thought it was a good introduction to the Attitude Era. You know, mania is mania, but after that, you got to settle back in. And I thought this was a good kickstarter to what was to come, the chaos for the rest of the year.
Yes. Before we conclude, I want to let everyone know, based on the history of WWE.com, two matches from this show are on other compilation DVDs, of course, the last two. The Kane Taker match is on Taker's Tombstone Collection. It's actually an extra on the Armageddon 06 DVD, because remember, that was the Inferno match with Kane and MVP, so they put that as an extra. The Kane Journey into Hell and the Twisted Disturbed Life of Kane. And the main event, the match we're just talking about, is actually on the Legacy of Stone Cold Steve Austin set. That's not the four disc. That was the three disc that came out, like 3 years ago? So just wanted to let you know that. But yeah, the crowd is eating it up. It's a perfect ending to the match. You know, if you give a good match and really tell a great story, then a DQ ending is not the worst thing in the world. Because you know, just based on how the match is going, the feud is not over.
No, you got to make it, you know, you got to make the match worth it, and you got to have a hot enough story to carry it. Those are the keys.
Exactly. That's really what it comes down to. So there you go. That is Unforgiven 1998. I know you had mentioned JR, but your final thoughts?
Yeah, I think I pretty much summed it all up. I thought it was a better show than I would have expected. I thought it was entertaining, and yeah, I think it's kind of a hidden, not almost a hidden gem, but it's maybe one level below a hidden gem.
I mean, the first pay-per-view, this is really the first pay-per-view solely focused around Austin as champion. Decent undercard, good main event, couple of dogs, that NWA storyline is just really aggravating me. We'd have some changes with different characters and factions over the next month. WCW's pay-per-views are slowly starting to kind of lose the grip. That was the first chink in the WCW armor. Comparatively now, WWF versus WCW pay-per-views, they're starting to become equal now, and I think eventually WWF passes them for the better pay-per-views. Of course, the Battle Raw Nitro, very different, but I'm just saying that with every...
Well, it depends. I mean, WCW pay-per-views had a great undercard and mid-card still. Even if the guys weren't booked or used properly, they still would put on great matches, and the main events were a little shaky, whereas on WWF's side, it was the opposite. The undercard is still kind of a little shaky, better than it used to be, but as the main events is where it's at. That's what everyone was waiting for. So I would say that the pay-per-views as a whole were better, because WCW actually had some pretty good ones still in 98. Just because they've lost the first battle in the war, I mean, things are still pretty even throughout the rest of the year. So I don't think WCW is like, I don't want to talk like it's dead and buried. They still had a lot of good stuff going on. So I don't think we should position it like, you know, that's it. They were in the grave and done.
Oh, no, not at all. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying this is a pay-per-view like this starts to become the first step where maybe WWF's pay-per-views might be a better investment at times than WCW. But they're still in good shape. Like we said on the last episode, the Monday Night War is not over.
Right.
But just because the Attitude Era started, as we know, I think the real beginning death knell for WCW occurs in a few more vaults, but we'll get to that when we get there. Overall, good show. If you can find it, you know what's funny? This show is remember when they had that weird Attitude Collection set, JR?
Yep.
With the gray outline. That's the copy I have, and it's not broken into chapters. It's one
right.
Long...
Yeah. No, it's two. It's broken in half.
Is it a two? Okay. Yeah.
It's two
like
pieces.
Two like 1 hour and 25 minute pieces or something like that.
Yeah.
So if you find that, you can get it pretty cheap on Amazon. You can find it for probably $3 or $4 if you want to get it. It's not a bad show to have. All right, you have heard from us and all of our unbelievable inklings. Yes. Now let us hear from you, PTB Nation. Let us find the.
I'll kick us off here with Wade May.
Yeah, go ahead.
This wasn't the best follow-up to WrestleMania, but it's still pretty good at the time. Not sure if it still holds up. I can tell you it does.
Taker and Kane's Inferno match was a sight to behold at this point, and I remember being on the edge of my seat for the entire match. I liked the main event between Austin and Jude Love a lot, and that ending when Austin knocked Vince out with the chair really made me anticipate what was going to happen on Raw the next night. You don't get that kind of anticipation in wrestling anymore.
Jay Hinchy, Unforgiven, comes to Greensboro, North Carolina, and is not a bad follow-up to WrestleMania the month before. Ken Shamrock, Steve Blackman, Farouk win a decent six-man opener against the Nation, with Farouk getting the pin on the Rock. Triple H once again retains the European title against Owen Hart in another solid match, thanks to some help from X-Pac and a fire extinguisher. New Midnight Express retained the NWA tag titles against the out-of-date Rock and Roll Express, but Jim Cornette getting into it with Tim White was entertaining. Luna wins a first-ever evening gown match against Sable. New Age Outlaws take on the LOD for the tag titles and escape again with a dusty finish following the double pin. Undertaker and Kane meet again in the first-ever Inferno match, which was very entertaining with Taker getting the win. Main event for the WWF title is Stone Cold Steve Austin takes on Dude Love in a very fun brawl. Vince gets involved and tries to screw Austin at one point. Vince takes a sick chair shot from Austin, and Dude is awarded the match by DQ for striking an official. Austin keeps the title, but has not seen the last of Dude Love or Mr. McMahon.
Corey Ferreira, WWF comes to the home of Starrcade and his Airness. Opener. So Farouk is out of the Nation, and Rock's now calling the shots. Match is really bad. They should have just done either Rock versus Shamrock or Rock versus Farouk, which seems more logical. Triple H versus Owen Hart, nice usage of the old cage above the ring to contain China. Very fitting for the location of the show, being the old NWA territory. Match itself is not as good as the main day match, but still decent. Triple H retains as Owen continues to look more and more devalued. NWA title match. Now I'm really convinced this NWA angle is just a giant rib on Cornette. Why the fuck is the NASCAR driver and a cowboy trying to be the Midnight Express? And what the fuck is wrong with the creative team? I know the idea is to try and redo the classic feud, but fuck, this is bad. Bob and Bart are fucking shit workers, and Morton and Gibson look so out of place here. Fucking awful. Evening gown match is another shit match, but everyone gets what they want. Sable getting stripped out of clothing. Tag title match, show another match between these teams. Once again, the Outlaws make the LOD look like shit, even after LOD missed weeks and weeks, and make Mania return after a supposed repackage. Match is bad. Inferno match debuts, and it's pretty solid. Taker goes over, but like they did at Mania, they keep Kane strong. Taker does another dive out of the ring, which is the best spot of the match. Steve Austin defeats Dude Love. Great main event. Dude Love worked better in this heel role than his babyface role from 97. Austin's run gets off to a great start with a really great match at the classic end, with this counting the three to retain the belt. Overall, really bad show in the undercard. The double main event saves it. And the Meltzer ratings, the opener, 1/2 star. Second match, Triple H and Owen, 2 3/4. The NWA match, 1 star. The evening gown, 1/2 star. The tag title, 3/4 star. Taker Kane, 2 3/4. And the main event, 4 stars.
Okay. 1/2 of the power trip from Down Under, Dave Hall. The trend continues upwards, although this show does have some big speed bumps. We start off with a six-man action. Shamrock and Farouk with Blackman's help go over the Nation. Average match begins the transition of Rock away from Shamrock. Triple H and Owen go again, and Trips again wins. I'm not sure why Owen keeps losing and feel that he really should have won this rubber match. However, it was a decent match. Then we have the toilet break as the new Midnight Express beat the Rock and Old Express. Waste of time. Then we have the male demographic match as Sable loses her clothes in the match, but no one is sad about that. The Outlaws again face OLD, I mean LOD. Har, har, har. I think Road Dogg said it best. How many times do we have to beat these fossils? What, did you write this? Match isn't bad, and the Outlaws continue to look like the number one team. Sadly, they had to do the old animal pinned himself thing. Then we get Taker vs. Kane in the Don't Play With Fire match. Not that great a match, and it was obvious who was going to win the match, the man who had exposed skin. The pay-per-view finishes with a smoking hot main event as Austin and Dude Love tear the house down in a great match, which finishes with a vicious chair shot to McMahon. One of the few times that a no-decision screwy finish is totally acceptable and plays into the storyline. I love the main event. Could not wait for the next installment.
Mr. Austin Fiff.
Mr. Fiff.
Just recently found this tape at a local comic show. Couldn't have been more perfect timing for this feedback. Six man's all right. Rock Frug match would have been better on its own. Hunter Owens, good match with China being up in the cage. Amazing feat of strength by China stretching the bars. Probably trick bars being realistic. Midnight Rock and Roll was just there. No point, really. Sable Luna was only a treat to see Sable next to nothing, finally. Not sure how many would want to see Luna the same way. Outlaws LOD was decent. We get another musical performance from Jarrett with Sawyer Brown. However, El Gigante was supposed to be the main act. Maybe you guys can have him on to explain what happened here. Inferno match was a red-hot concept that was a good follow-up for Mania. Even if the match wasn't that good, the build was. Austin Dude was a great main event that doesn't get talked about that much, I feel. McMahon took a wicked chair shot and sold it well. Decent event overall.
And the guy whose house we borrowed to have this pay-per-view, Mr. Cruz. I remember not ordering this show on pay-per-view, but buying the VHS soon after at Suncoast Video. What was that, next to the Piggly Wiggly?
You don't remember Suncoast Video?
No, I don't. I never saw one up here.
Yeah,
they
were there.
Not in Connecticut, anyway.
I swear I've seen one there.
Oh, I've never seen a Suncoast video.
Outside your fucking house.
First Inferno match is a historical note, but I think it's been done sparingly since for an obvious reason. These matches are never any good. Another Triple H Owen match. Which was always a fun pairing in my opinion. He's using one of those hillbilly keyboards with no E. Otherwise, a big selling point of this show is the possibility of Sable showing a lot of skin, which of course she did. The first Dude Love Austin encounter is a lot of fun. These two always had a lot of chemistry, bringing the crazy good brawls. Otherwise, the show is pretty forgettable, but good things are straight ahead, I'd say.
All right, everyone, stand up, please. It is now time for King James Mander.
Long live the king.
I'm going to let you read this one, Scott. My voice is gone. I'm sorry.
Certainly, certainly. Here's my 2 cents on Unforgiven. What a stupid match between Triple H and Owen Hart. Way too much time is devoted to watching China ridiculously bending bars and swinging from a cage. What are we, at Club Fantasies? And then, as usual, Hunter cheats his way to the win. Why on earth Scott likes this dickhead so much? You're lucky you're a king. It's possible that the match between the Rock and Roll Express and the New Midnight Express actually might be one of the worst matches I've ever seen.
One of the worst in my whole kingdom.
It's embarrassing seeing them try to run down to the ring to the Rockers' music. They did? Well, they move about as fast as Stephen Hawking. God, Jesus. We get a better view of Sable's ridiculous boob job. She's literally carrying two globes around on her chest. Give me Sunny over her any day. Yet another dusty finish for the LOD, pretty much identical to the one that happened a year earlier against Owen and the Bulldog. I think a heel run would have been perfect for them at this point. Jeff Jarrett comes out using his old gimmick yet again. Fuck off! Didn't enjoy the Inferno matches. There is absolutely no atmosphere in the wrestling. Well, there isn't any. Again, the wrestling in the Stone Cold vs. Dude Love match is very poor. The best bit of the match is when Steve is on the mat, and he accidentally spits right in Mike Kyoto's face, and he acts like he's been shot. Good on Vince, though, for taking an unprotected chair shot to the head. I guess it turns out I didn't like the pay-per-view very much at all. Some interesting ideas and concepts, but I don't think any of them come off well here. Goodbye!
There is your feedback for this week. Scott, a couple of points. Yes. Are we going to start like reading the feedback before? Because I feel like I always catch things that we kind of missed, and I don't blame us for missing them because we had heated debates in both these matches. The tag title match, LOD and the Outlaws. After the match, the LOD attacked the ref, and it was kind of stupid, I thought. But the other thing we missed, I can't believe we skipped over it and we forgot. Undertaker and Kane match. Vader comes out during the match to get some revenge on Paul Bearer and Kane. And Taker does that no-hands dive over the fire and onto all three men down at ringside. So I just wanted to make sure we mentioned those two things.
I don't remember Vader coming out.
Yeah, Vader comes out and that sets the stage for he does. He comes out and then Taker does that great dive over the top. So.
Oh, the dive I remember. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Wow. I didn't even remember. Good call,
yeah.
PTB Nation. My apologies. Wow, I totally forgot about Vader coming out.
I meant to discuss that. We were talking the match, so we got sidetracked. So,
yeah, wow.
All right, there is your review of Unforgiven 1998. Hope you enjoyed that little two-piece. And, you know, go back. If you didn't listen to the Raw, you should, because we announced the winner of the Jay Womet contest, and we announced all the people that contributed to that. So if you happen to skip ahead to this, go back and listen. Find out if you won. That was a 4/13/98 Raw leading into this here, Unforgiven 98. Scott, we're actually going to be back later this week at unprecedented third. Well, it's precedented, but rare third episode this week. We're going to be doing headlines. We're going to a little Christmas theme. It's our Christmas episode this week. So we have some little treats planned for you. Kyle Forchetti will be here to talk NFL. We'll do some predictions, lots of things, lots of goodies for the nation. Next week, we are in talks with Kevin Kelly. We want to do that college football / old school wrestling chat with Kevin. Just a chance to bullshit with him, something we don't get to do. He's usually we're just going through, history of years in wrestling. It'll be cool just to kind of talk about him, how he became a fan, what he likes, and things like that. So that'll either be the next week or the week after. We're not sure. And then next Wednesday, finally, Josh Richard and Andrew Flanagan will be here to talk some WCF. I'm looking forward to that quite a bit. So
I am as well.
There is all your programming heading into the Christmas holiday. Hope anyone who celebrated Hanukkah this past weekend enjoyed that as well. So, all right, Scott, I think that's it. Anything else you want to discuss?
Don't we have the main event to do?
All right, that's Scott. I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you later this week with some headlines.
Getting a gift.
You're right. You know, the king is right. You are a dickhead.
I'm getting a merce.
You already have a merce. Keep your merkin in it.
Ashley Cruz needs a new keyboard.
He needs a new merkin, too. Children
and sing and clap their hands, and Dominic starts to dance. They talk Italian to a man he even understands. Cumbares and cumbares do they dance a darandel. When Santa Nicola comes to town and brings old Chucharilla, hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the donkey, jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la. Hey, Dominic, want another dollar?